This episode of Voices of the Elephant is brought to you by EngineYard, the leading platform as a service. Our Orchestra PHP platform is the easiest way for you to deploy scalable PHP apps in the cloud. And we love the PHP community.
Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, we're here today for the very first episode of Season 2 of Voices of the Elephant, and it is my great pleasure to have a longtime friend of mine, Mr. Matthew Weir O'Finney, Supreme Allied Commander of the Zen Framework. Salute!
Hi, Matthew. Stop it. Hi.
Sorry, Keith started that, and I've just every time I do it. We were on CodeWorks, the CodeWorks tour recently, and every time I mentioned Zen Framework, I would salute you. So it was fun.
Fun. I was there for one of them.
That's true, you were. And I kept telling people that you were kind enough not to heckle me, but you came up afterward and pointed out all the problems with my talk. So
it's just improvements.
Anyhow, let's dive right in to our questions. Recently, mutual friend of ours, Ed Finkler, and I love Ed to death. I'm not picking on Ed, but Ed put out there a blog post called the Micro PHP Manifesto, and he also wrote a follow-up FAQ. He's recorded a couple podcasts, both on his and with Liz Nairmore. He's really pushing this whole micro PHP concept. Since Zen Framework is the exact opposite of what he's talking about in a micro framework, I really wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I know you've read Ed's work.
Yep. So I guess this is where I dive in. I followed along with it. I've actually talked with Ed about it. I think kind of some of the ideas around it were starting at PHP Tech last year. He and I were talking about packaging and how he likes to put things together from smaller components and everything. And I totally get it. I get the idea a lot. For me, the way that, he wrote the manifesto and, some conversations I've had with him since, there's some things that, I like about it, and there's some things I don't like about it. Obviously, like he said, I work on Zen Framework, which is in many ways the exact opposite of it. I like the idea of putting things together from small pieces. And actually for me, that's really what building a framework really is. You take these small pieces and you put them together in a cohesive whole so that you can accomplish something easily and quickly and maintain it over a long period of time. I like the idea of small components too. I actually built a mustache library that is included on MicroPHP. He has aggregates a number of projects on there, and that's included on there. And the idea is, it does one thing well. One of the problems I run into, however, with the concept of MicroPHP and some of the discussion around it is that for me, I feel it discourages code reuse in a certain way. I know that Ed really wants it to be actually encouraging it, use what's out there and don't reinvent the wheel. But one of the problems I see is that quite often you'll develop a single component and say, for instance, you need to have caching or logging or something in there. When you're wanting to build something standalone, quite often what you'll want to do is make it as standalone as possible. So you build all that stuff yourself. And so you've done that, and now this other piece that you're also using also has done that, and this other piece that you're pulling in has also done this. So now you have three loggers to configure, three caching mechanisms to configure, that sort of thing. And that gets, as a developer for me, that gets old. I don't want to be configuring these layers that I know I've got. It's doing the same thing across all of them, but I have to configure them differently. They use different things internally. The APIs are varying quite a bit, and it's frustrating to me. And that, to me, is really what frameworks are trying to solve, is that consistency bit. Mm-hmm. So that, as I go and use the code, I know that I'm going to be using, if one component requires a cache, all of them are going to be requiring the same cache and the same API. Same thing for logging, same thing for how events might work, that sort of thing. So to me, that's quite often what the framework is trying to solve, is that consistency bit. And that also goes with when you're developing with, you know, putting things together from disparate pieces, is that the standards will, you know, not just, you know, the ethical standards and everything, but also like the coding standards, the testing standards, documentation and all that's going to vary quite a bit between all the different projects. So if I'm using Twig and I'm using Pear's CacheLite and I'm using a class from PHP Classes, I'm using something that I found on GitHub, what I might find is that as I try to understand the code, I'm having these context switches as I go in and out of different APIs. You know, I'm using caching here and I'm integrating it with you know, the logging from over here, and I'm using the mailer from over here and the template engine from here, and the coding styles all differ. And that's a big mental shift. It may seem like a trivial thing, but the more often you're having to do it, the more often it's distracting you from the actual coding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another problem I have with building it up from all these you know, little pieces. It's not to say that you can't do it, and I think for small projects, it works fine. Or smaller, very targeted projects, you know, building up this sort of thing can be fine, especially if you're able to build kind of a framework over it that gives you your own API, and you're not, you know, you're just consuming these things within it. It becomes a little bit easier. But I find that, you know, once you get into a medium and larger size projects, having that sort of consistency that a framework brings you, I think, is a really important piece of the puzzle for developers. It allows you to focus more on what you're trying to code versus understanding the code. The other thing that I disagree with a little bit with what Ed has stated is he feels that when you bring code into your project from a third party, he feels responsible for that code within the project. So he feels that he needs to completely understand it. And that's something else I disagree with. For me, if I'm bringing third-party code in, if it breaks, that's the maintainer's problem. And I'll push a bug report up there. I'll recreate it as close as I can so I can do a good, accurate bug report. But it's not my job to do that. My question is, can I look at the code, take a quick glance at the tests, take a quick glance at the API and say, can I use it? And do I trust that, you know, they did their adequate and due diligence in coding it and making sure that it's robust? And I don't necessarily have to understand all the internals and everything of how it works. Can I just take a look at it very quickly and figure that out? I don't feel like I need to maintain it. And that's I think, one of the key differences for me. And that's also, I think, where I am more willing to use code that has dependencies elsewhere, you know, for options or caching or logging or whatever. I'm okay with having, you know, additional dependencies and kind of getting away from that micro part if it means that the code reuse is excellent and it means it's more consistent and that I can trust it.
Yeah. And you know, I'm kind of on the same page with you. I agree with a lot of what Ed is saying, and I agree with where he's coming from. But there are times when a framework, something like Xen Framework, is really the best option. And I'll give you an example. I help small companies that don't have big PHP teams interview PHP developers and help you know, figure out if they're going to be a good fit. And I was helping this one company, and we interviewed this guy that was the IT guy. I'm doing quotey fingers there. The IT guy for a small town. You know, he did it all. He built their website. He took care of everything. And I asked him. I said, you know, did you build on a framework? And he says, yeah, I built on a framework. I wrote my own. I said, hey, that's great. When you leave, who's going to maintain that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was actively looking to leave, you know, and with if you build your own or something like this, if you don't depend on if you're not willing to allow others to help you, then you end up with you're the sole maintainer. Whereas with Xen Framework, you've got, what, 200 active contributors?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you got all these people that are actively working to make sure the stuff that you use is rock solid. So there are trade-offs, and I don't agree. The one thing I don't agree with Ed, and I do agree with you, I don't have to understand every piece of Zen framework that I'm going to use. If I need a logger, I can just drop a logger in. I love Zencash, and you know, I've used it several times without the full framework. You know, it's just great to be able to drop it in, and I don't have to read the code and understand how it works. I just got to know how to use it. So
right. You know, one thing I do agree with that, though, is that, you know, the components, you should be able to grab them easily. And, you know, that's one thing we've actively worked on for Zen Framework 2, and we're actually you can ship, you know, you can grab the entire the repository, or you can grab a package that has the entire framework. But we also have the Pyrus channel, so it's a Pear2's channel server, basically, that you can grab the individual components. And when you grab them, it'll get the dependencies, but only the dependencies it needs. So if you want just logger, you can do that, and any dependencies it has will come in as well. But that means you've got a small amount of code instead of the entire thing. And I think that's also a very important bit, and it's, you know, something that was clearly missing from Zen Framework 1 and was, you know, we've been talking about it for a while, and actually the talks that Ed and I had at PHP Tech last year were kind of instrumental in me saying, yeah, we really need to make this happen, and pushing my team to get that to work. So
yeah, and Zen Framework 1, at one point there was a website that somebody else had written that had that. You could put in the component that you wanted to use, and it would go using tokens. It would actually parse the code and look at the tokens and say, okay, these are all the dependencies. I'm going to gather them up into a zip file for you.
Yeah, I believe he looked for the require once calls throughout the framework in order to do it. And we have a similar thing right now. That's actually how we're identifying the dependencies initially, and then we go through and refine them. But yeah, we have a similar tokenizer that scans through the code for import statements now.
That's cool. So. And I'm glad to see that happening, because there are, I've written two or three projects where I end up having the entire Zen framework in there, and I'm using cache, or I'm using logger,
right,
or something simple. And, you know, I agree with Ed, and I don't want all this stuff there. I just want that piece. But, you know, it's a testament to Zen framework that I'm willing to put up with that, because I like the pieces out of Zen framework. So,
And I hear that time and again from people. I know a number of people I've talked to where they use Zen framework on every project, but to varying degrees. You know, one will be entire with MVC, another will just use a few components here and there. And for them, they're willing to just, you know, go ahead and drop it in because, as you said, hey, you know, there's enough enough use cases that they might as well just grab the entire thing. But on the other hand, it'd be really nice if they could just grab exactly what they want.
Yep.
So we're trying to make that possible, and it is possible with CF2 already today with our betas.
Excellent. Hey, we're going to stop for a second and talk about our sponsor. We've got a brand new sponsor for Season 2 I'm really excited about, Engine Yard, Orchestra.io. Have you played with Engine Yard at all, or Orchestra at all?
A little bit, yeah. They invited me to basically to help and see if I could deploy a Zen framework application on there, and I've done that and played a little bit with it since.
So. Any problems with it? I mean, were you able to get the Zen framework app up and running?
Yep, absolutely. Got it up and running right away.
That is really cool. I know my thing is, I love it. There's a lot of them out there that, you know, like Engine Yard and Orchestra, you can attach your Git repo to, and you can just push. Orchestra also supports SVN for those of us old guys who haven't gone to the new shiny yet. You know, we can still use SVN, but
you now have a little letter branded on your forehead, right?
Yeah, I have a scarlet S on my forehead. But the thing I love about it is the auto scaling. That is just really cool, because I mean, we've all been there. We get seasonal traffic, or God forbid, we get mentioned on Slashdot, Dig, or Oprah, and our traffic goes through the roofs, or our servers go through the floor and just melt down. So it's nice to see that they scale up. And of course, Theo Schlossnagel, in one of his brilliant blog posts, I think it was a job posting once, said, if you use the word scale and don't mean up and down, I will beat you with a stick. And they scale back down when the traffic's done. So I think they're really cool. And they are a sponsor, and this is a sponsored plug, but they're worth taking a look at if you're deploying PHP applications. Okay, question number two. Okay, Zen Framework 2 is close but not done. What should a project do if they're beginning new development? Should they go with 2? Should they go with 1? How do they make that differentiation? And of course, the follow-up to that is, what happens to all the people that have developed on one but aren't quite in the position to redo their application in Xen Framework 2? I mean, are they going to be left holding the bag come whenever 2.0 comes out?
Oh, no. So, yeah, we're getting close with 2. We've got a beta coming up at the end of February. That's beta 3. At that point, we're going to have the view layer in place. I'm actually just about done with it as we're recording this. At that point, I actually feel the framework is in a position where you should start developing on it. We're going to have the database abstraction layer will have been refactored. MVC will have been entirely refactored at this point, other than forms, which will be for the next beta. But that puts us into a position where I think you can really start adopting it for new projects. And we actually want you to in many ways, because the more of you who adopt it for projects now means that the more people who are giving us feedback before we go stable. And that's what we want, is because we want to make it rock solid so that when we do go stable, people who are developing on it can feel like, hey, I can live with this API for the lifetime of Xen Framework 2. Because, of course, once we go, hit this new major version, we're going to try and keep the BC breaks as small or as on necessary as possible between now and 3.0. So I would actually argue, if you have a project that you're developing that's going to be, going stable, from summer onwards, I would argue start building on ZF2 now. Our plan is right now to do a stable release in during the summer, sometime between June and the end of August. So I believe this is the full spectrum of summer. We're not sure exactly when, but with beta 3, like I said, we're going to be fairly complete. We'll have the forms layer is the only major rewrite left after this, and a little bit more on the data abstraction to cover all of the different databases we want to support. But other than that, the features are mainly there, and it's a matter of stabilizing things and making things consistent within the framework at this point. I would say do that. Now, as for ZF1, that was your follow-up question, is, what happens to the people using that? If you're already developing in ZF1, your project is running in it, we're going to continue supporting it for at least 18 months after we go stable. So, through January of 2014, that's going to be the very earliest we would stop supporting, and very likely we'll keep supporting for a bit after that. You don't have to worry about it. We are going to do a 1.12 release in the next 1 to 2 months, and that's going to have a few backported features from ZF2, including the event manager and the new autoloaders, which Rob Allen actually just blogged about today.
Nice.
And with those in place, that'll also give a little bit of a transition path, and also some performance things that you can utilize in your applications for ZF1. There's going to be a few other minor features as well in there, but really it's mostly on getting some stabilization in the 1.x tree that you can live with for the duration of the 1.x lifetime.
Okay. Excellent. Now, I guess that leads us straight into the and you covered part of this in question 2, but question 3 is, what is the current state of Xen Framework 2? And again, this is going to be released a couple weeks after we're actually recording it, but as of right now, you said the view manager is about done?
The view layer, yep.
View layer.
We've done a lot of work. In ZenCon, we released our first beta, and mm-hmm. we're doing Gmail-style betas. So that means, we're adding features. That we may break a little bit of BC between the betas and everything. But the idea is that we're doing incremental improvements and rolling releases. So with the first beta, we released the new MVC layer, which is very event-driven, very dependency injection-driven, and basically trying to answer the questions of how do I get dependencies into my controllers, and then also how can we make this as flexible as possible to accommodate all the various workflows that people want to have. So we're shipping kind of a default workflow, but the nice part is that you can alter it however you want, which is the beauty of it. With beta 2, we did a few features like cache got rewritten, mail got rewritten, that sort of thing. And beta 3 right now, we're really focusing on a variety of things around the MVC to stabilize it. One is database, which isn't really MVC, but it's a feature that's used by a whole bunch of people. A lot of people are asking, you know, why aren't we just integrating with Doctrine? And the thing is that Doctrine gives an ORM, but we need to have a nice, rich data abstraction layer, because a lot of people do things like reporting, you know, basic CRUD screens and that sort of thing that they need to just be basically right down to the database level. So we want to be able to give them those tools. We're rewriting that to make it very flexible, make it easy to share the connections between the data abstraction layer and Doctrine if you want to, which is not something easy to do in Zen Framework 1 at this point. The other big feature, of course, for this upcoming beta 3, which will be at the end of February, is the view layer. And this isn't really, you know, we're not getting rid of our PHP-driven templating system, but it's actually a layer on top of that, which is how do we interact with the request and the response, and how do we select a rendering strategy. So to give an example, you know, we all do, you know, these Ajax applications. Ajax is such a 90s buzzword at this point, as far as I'm concerned. But the, you know, XML HTTP request is a very standard way of, you know, making your site dynamic. And you might be getting HTML snippets, but you might be getting JSON as well. And so how do you do that? And quite often you're using the accept header. In ZF1, there's all sorts of hacks. I even created them, like the context switch, that are kind of a pain. And they're in the wrong place, really, is what it comes down to. And what we're doing now is we're saying, in your controllers, you return what's called a view model, which is just saying, here are the variables that I need to inject. And maybe here's some options. Here's the template I want to use. A few other things. You can actually do trees of views, view models as well. And then what happens is the view gets this and it says, okay, I'm going to render this. Well, how am I going to do that? And we'll say, I'm going to pass this to these strategies, and the strategy is going to determine what I need to do. So it may say, oh, well, the accept header says I want to have JSON returned. So now I'm going to select my JSON renderer, and the JSON renderer will now cache this as a JSON data graph and return it and inject it into the response. You may say, hey, I just got a feed, so I need to return this as a feed. And so it will then go and return a feed to the person. So it's a really nice solution to making this more flexible and giving you a lot more a lot of rich options for how you want to actually render the view in the end. So that's the part that we're working on right now. After this beta 4, the big story for that one is going to be forms. And forms in Zen Framework 1 are one of those, you know, you either love them or you hate them. Mainly the love and hate is all around the decorators. And the other part that people love and hate about it is the, you know, the validation is really awesome, but a lot of people want to do the validation closer to their models, in part because not every bit of data coming in is coming in over an HTML form. They may be coming in over web services. So they want to basically take that validation and be able to apply it to their models as well. So we're looking at refactoring. One of the things we're looking at, the architecture I've been playing with, is to basically have a validation and filter chain attached to the form directly that you can then detach and you know, put on your models or whatever. And just having the form and the elements themselves be value objects, so that you could then take those and you pass them to helpers, and the helper decides what it, you know, pulls out what it needs in order to render. So it's a little bit more explicit in your view script. You can't just say echo form typically. But what it does mean is you have a lot more fine-grained control, and it's a little bit easier to understand what's going to happen at any given point.
I like that. And back in the probably the 1.5 days, 1.6 days, I think you and I had a couple conversations. You probably don't remember because you have so many, but about the fact that the reason I hate forms is I want my validation in my object, not in my form. And I had actually started tinkering with that very concept of, instead of building the filter or in building the validators and using them on the form, but being able to detach it and just attach it to your model and have it automatically apply there also. Because I like the business rules run on the back, not the front. But that's right. Just the way I do it.
That's been a common request for Zen Framework, actually, is that exact pattern right there.
See, so, I just thought I was brilliant and had figured this out all on my own. I guess not. Anyhow, no, that's one of the things we had talked about was the fact that, you know, I wasn't the only one looking at this. And I'm glad that you guys have done that, because that was really my biggest problem in using Zen Framework on large scale applications was the form and where I had to put my business rules, which, you know, the validators to me represent my business rules. You know, first name can only be 35 characters, that kind of stuff. That's a business rule to me, and it was kind of bothering. So I am glad that y'all have moved there. And I will throw a link into the show notes for Rob Allen's blog post that you said he posted today, because like I said in a recent interview, if you're doing Zen Framework and you're not reading Rob Allen's blogs, you're doing it wrong. So, you know, he's just got such good content.
Yeah, he's really good at explaining things in a succinct way that's easily accessible.
Yeah, really is. Okay, this is the question I ask everybody. What is your local user group and what's the URL?
So we don't have one right now. I moved to Sioux Falls almost exactly a year ago from the time we're recording this, and I've been kind of looking around. I've got a Google group up now, and I actually plan to email bomb a bunch of agencies I know about so that we can start forming one. So as you say, tag, I'm it. So I'm trying to put one.
If you look around for a user group leader and you can't find it, you're it. So
exactly. So if you live in Sioux Falls and you're listening to this, look for the FSD PHP Google group and start letting everybody know that you use PHP here in Sioux Falls, and we'll try and get a group together.
Yeah, we'll throw a link to that Google group in the show notes so that people can get into or get it and join it and get involved, because, yeah, we want to encourage that as much as possible. Well, Matthew, thank you for your time today. Thank you for taking my good-natured ribbing on being the Supreme Allied Commander of Zen Framework. Salute. And seriously, thanks for all that you do for the PHP community.
Thank you, Cal.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.
Engine Yard is a proud supporter of the Voices of the Elephant podcast. We're a leader in cloud-based platform as a service, and you may have heard of our Orchestra PHP platform, which is designed to let you focus on writing awesome PHP apps. Basically, we save you time and money and keep your app up and running for you. For more information, you can hang out with us on IRC at Pound Orchestra on Freenode, or for more information, you can also go to our website at engineyard.com/products/orchestra.